You're listening to the Vertical Access Podcast. VA is the college-age community of High Street Baptist Church in Springfield, Missouri. For more information, go to highstreet.org.
We are in a series called The Thing You Fear Right Now. How many of y'all were with us last week? Good, good, good. I'm excited about this series, and here's why. I think fear is a huge, huge issue in all of our lives, and by and large goes untalked about and really unknown. Because when you think about it, there's not a lot of times in your life when you just say to yourself, man, I am afraid right now. Like, I am in fear. Usually we think of fear like when I am physically in harm, like when I missed narrowly missed a wreck, or when maybe you're walking to your car late at night and you just feel that creepy feeling and, you know, bumps in the back of your neck. Anybody ever been there before? Is that just me? Okay, I'm just the coward in the room then. All right, good. But fear isn't something that we think we experience a lot of times. What we talked about last week is something we live with on a regular basis. But we don't think of it as fear because it manifests itself differently. And so fear rears its ugly head when you're really stressed and anxious about school. Fear rears itself and gets and shows itself to be true in your life when you're kind of filled with dread about a difficult circumstance, situation, or conversation you've got to have with someone. Or even when you're just down, out, and depressed, you've kind of given up hope in a situation and it's led you to depression. That's fear at work in your life. And so this whole series is about fear. It's talking about how do we overcome these things. Because I don't believe that if God has called you to himself tonight, that he has designed for you to live the rest of your life enslaved to fear. And so these first 2 weeks have kind of been like groundwork for what we're going to talk about here to come, which is getting to the nitty-gritty details of what kind of fears do we face and how do we overcome them. And so if you're here last week, we talked about this big idea. We said, what does it mean to fear the Lord? Okay, the number one most repeated commandment in all the Bible is do not fear. Do not be afraid. Fear not. More than any other commandment, more than love your neighbors, love God, don't worship idols, more than any other commandment, fear not is the number one. But at the same time, what we see throughout the Bible is God calls his children, calls his people to have this unique relationship with him where it's called fearing the Lord. So on one hand, God says, don't be afraid. But on the other hand, he says, be afraid of me. And so we talked about how do these things relate to one another. And we said, you know, if we look at the Bible and we look at our lives, there are some very real reasons why we should fear the Lord. And not just like a fear like maybe you think of like, I respect God. Like you respect your landlord or you respect your professor. You don't fear your professor. Maybe some of you do right now, but that's a whole other topic for another night. But it really is talking about having this sense of trembling and trepidation before God, your creator. And we said there are some very good reasons to do that. And here's the incredible thing, because this all sounds very narrow and very kind of fundamentalist and scary. And it is scary. But the incredible thing we discovered last week is that God is the only relationship you will ever encounter that when you fear him, he becomes your friend. I would venture to guess that none of you have a close friendship right now that began like this. You terrify me. Hey, BFF, right? Like, it just doesn't work that way, right? Like, you don't go from, I'm terrified of you, to we're now best buds. Maybe that worked for some of you guys who are dating a girl right now. It's like, I'm terrified of talking to you, and somehow you fumbled through it, and it worked out for best. But by and large, our relationships don't begin like that. But what we see with our creator, with our God, is that when we fear him and we submit ourselves to his authority and his power and his rule in our life, we find that the most terrible, mighty, fearful force in all of existence, the most powerful being in all of existence, is committed to our good. It's like, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, you know, I got in a couple of situations where you might want to call them fights. I call them just little altercations. And when you get into an altercation or you're about to get into a fight, you begin to look for like the toughest guy in the room, right? Like that guy's big and he's scary. I want him on my side. Well, fearing God is like realizing you've got the toughest, meanest, baddest kid on the block on your team. Now, I know that's kind of a silly illustration, but that's the idea, is that the only relationship that you can ever have, the only person or thing you can ever fear, that when you fear produces nothing but peace in your life. Like think about that for a second. Where else in your life does fear lead to peace? Nowhere. Nowhere in your life can you ever be afraid of something and it leads to peace and joy and freedom. But with God, the promise we see in the Bible is that when we fear him, it creates nothing but peace in your life, nothing but joy and shalom, was what the Bible calls it, a sense of well-being in your life. And that's an incredible thought. And how do we know that God is committed to our good? He's on our side because the Bible tells us that he is so committed to us. The proof of his love for us is that he sent his own son to die in our place. The Bible says that when we were born into this world, we were born not good people who struggle a little bit, but broken people who are inherently dead, spiritually stillborn. And that Jesus, 2,000 years ago when he died, wasn't just a good man dying as an example, but that he was God himself coming to take our place for the punishment we deserved. And that when you look to the cross, and if you seek Jesus as your Savior, as your rescue, as your forgiveness, as your hope for eternity, and as your hope for reconciliation and forgiveness, then that is substituted in your place. His holiness is given to you, and your sinfulness is given to him. And we see through that God is for our side. What an incredible thought. All right, think about this for a moment. The most powerful force, if you identify yourself as a Christian tonight, the most powerful, sovereign, authoritative figure in all of existence is on your side. You ever wondered that verse in Romans 8, if you've been in church for a while, maybe this is familiar to you. It says, we are more than conquerors in Christ Jesus. If God be for us, who can be against us? Well, it makes total sense when you understand the fear of God. And so that's what we talked about last week. We kind of laid the groundwork, and if you weren't here, I wanted to kind of hit that again because what we're going to talk about today won't make as much sense unless you understand what the fear of God actually means and how it works in your life. Now, when you talk about the fear of the Lord, there's another statement that usually comes up, which is repeated a lot in Proverbs, a lot in Psalms, and elsewhere throughout the Bible, and it's this. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of anybody? Knowledge, wisdom. Okay, let's try this again. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of? Oh, this is good. All right. I'll give you a hint. Okay, the answer to number one is wisdom. All right. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of?
Wisdom.
Who was that? All right, someone still said knowledge. It was awesome. Man, it's like that guy, he can't even pass when he's got the... Anyways, all right, moving on. All right, JK, whoever that was. All right, And so this is a very repeated thought throughout the Bible. Now, if you're like me, okay, I didn't grow up in church. My parents were kind of nominal Christians. And so I was kind of thrust into church at a later stage in life when I was like late high school, early college. It's really when I got plugged in and dug into church. And so I always felt like I was a little behind the curve. Right, like these other kids in my classes and groups that I was a part of, like, man, they're like, oh, you know, like that story between like Shimalimalak and Hezekiah, and like, yeah, dude, I know exactly what you're talking about, right? Like, yeah, that was crazy what God did. Jesus, right? Like, I don't know if you're like me, okay? That's what it was like for me growing up, all right? But this is like memory verse number one for kids growing up. This is like the first thing they hammer home in your head. The beginning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And it made no sense to me at all. Like, how does being afraid of someone make you more wise? Like, I get it, right? Like, you're bigger than me. I'm afraid of you. I'm going to be wise and not tick you off. But really, with God, is that how this is supposed to work and function? And so, these 2 weeks are crucial for you to understand how to overcome fear in your life. And so tonight, we're just going to unpack this. What does it mean that the fear of the Lord, the fear of God, is the beginning of knowledge and wisdom in your life? But before we do that, I want to establish why this matters to you at all. Because what good does it do if I perfectly explain wisdom and we look at God's word and we see about where we find wisdom if you don't even know why you need it in the first place? Okay, so I want to help you understand why this message matters, why you should listen to this. Here's the reality. The older you get, the more you will find that problems, situations, and questions come up that do not have black and white answers to them. The more you live life, the farther you go, the more experiences you have, you will encounter more and more circumstances and situations that are very, very gray. And you'll be forced to almost choose between the lesser of two evils. Right? If I go this way, this will be bad. But if I go this way, this will be bad. What do I do? The more you go on, you're going to have to make choices about your future vocations and jobs and where you're going to live and what you're going to do and where you're going to go. And there is no apparent right answer. You're going to go on and you're going to meet someone, or maybe you won't meet someone. And if you do meet someone, you're going to be, how do I know if this is the person that I'm supposed to spend the rest of my life with? And these questions can cause great fear in our heart. Where do I go? What do I do? Who do I do it with? What's this all going to be like? Or maybe you're just thrown into a circumstances where it seems like there's no good out. And in the midst of all of this gray, There is one huge concept that the Bible offers to us that can guide you through all of it. And it's not going to be that you have the magic pill, the perfect answer, the A on one, C on two, D on three, I got 100. But it's going to be that you're going to have something to guide you through all of these mazes and all of these difficult things to figure out. And it's called wisdom. Okay, wisdom is what guides you through the gray. When it doesn't seem like there's a black and white answer, what you need is wisdom. I promise you, the longer you go in life, the more crucial it's going to be for you to know what wisdom is and to know what wisdom looks like and to know how to seek it out in your life, where to find it, how to use it, and how to apply it to various situations in your life. Because you are now embarking into this stage of life where you are transitioning from having people who you grew up with who told you everything to do to having no one to tell you what to do. And you're going to come to a point in your life, it may be tomorrow, it might be 20 years from now, but there's not going to be someone with a ready-made answer to help you get through all of life's stuff. And you and I, we all need wisdom to process through these things. Wisdom's crucial. It's the difference between setting yourself up a future that's filled with peace and joy and blessing, or a future that's filled with anxiety and stress and curse. You know, I mean, it's a huge, huge issue. And so we're going to ask tonight, what is wisdom in and of itself? Because that's a word that's very kind of vanilla. It gets thrown around in a lot of different ways. So we want to clarify, what do we mean? What does the Bible mean by when we use the word wisdom? And then more importantly, where can you and I find wisdom? How do we unlock that wisdom and apply it to our lives? And so if you have a Bible, we're going to take a look at Proverbs chapter 1. And we're going to look at the very first 7 verses. The book of Proverbs is the book all about wisdom. And we're going to see that in the very first verse. And here's the big idea from tonight that we're going to get from Proverbs. Here's the big idea. The fear of God gives us the right perspective to walk in wisdom. The fear of God gives us the right perspective to walk in wisdom. If you look at Proverbs 1:1, if you don't have a Bible with you, we'll have it on the screen for you. It says this. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction. So right off the bat, it says, what are the purpose of these Proverbs? It's to know wisdom and instruction. To understand words of insight. To receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity. To give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. And so what I want to do first is I want to establish and lay the groundwork for you. What are we talking about when we use this word wisdom? Now, there's 3 things. So if you're taking notes, you want to write these 3 things down, okay? There are 3 things that wisdom is comprised of, okay? Number 1, knowledge. Knowledge. Number 2, perspective. And number 3, transformation. Wisdom is built on 3 things. Knowledge, perspective, transformation. Knowledge, perspective, transformation. Let me show you where I got that from in this passage. If you look at verse number 6, it says this. To understand a proverb and a saying, the word of the wise and their riddles. And what it's saying is to gain guidance, you have to, first of all, you have to understand what the proverb is saying. You have to gain insight into the truth it's trying to communicate. See, wisdom in your life begins first with knowledge. It begins first with a new insight that you didn't previously know or understand. Have you ever had that kind of that light bulb moment? Where you were like, oh my gosh, now I know why this is happening because this has been going on all along. Or maybe you had like a tense relationship and you never understood why that person maybe didn't respond to your text messages right away, or that coworker always seemed kind of grumpy with you. And all of a sudden one day you get this moment of insight, this new information, this new knowledge that you previously didn't have. And all of a sudden you're like, it makes total sense now. Why this has been happening, I understand it now. See, wisdom always begins with knowledge, with information, with an insight that you didn't previously have. But it doesn't stop there. See, the problem with a lot of people in our society is we think wisdom is all about getting information, about getting knowledge. If I can read enough books, read enough blogs, if I can listen to enough stuff, especially with Christians in our culture, if I can get enough information packed into my brain, I will become a wise person. But what we see is wisdom begins at knowledge, but it does not end there. And so knowledge is a previous thing that you did not know that you now have an insight to. Then it goes to perspective. So we have knowledge first, then perspective. Verse 5 says this. It says, let the wise hear and increase in learning. And then here's the key. And the one who understands obtain guidance. And so this verse is saying, when a person understands, that means they've already received the knowledge. They've already gained the insight that they needed. They are in understanding of the reality of truth. Let them obtain guidance. And so when you receive guidance, it's about shaping your perspective of what needs to take place in the future. I may understand that I need to go to a certain location for a meeting that I have. I may receive that truth. The address is this. That's new insight. But if it stops there, I'm not good because information doesn't lead to anything. It needs to shape my perspective. So I need to obtain guidance for how to view my future. And so perspective is all about how you view your life in this world around you. So let's take that relationship that we talked about, that coworker. They've always been kind of rough and mean to you, or it's always been kind of a tense relationship. And then you had that light bulb moment and you're like, man, that makes sense now. What it should do is it should shape your perspective towards that person. So maybe it looks like this. You know, I realize I was really hard on them, but they've got a lot of stuff going on at home. They've got a lot of stuff they're dealing with right now in their personal life outside of work. And I need to have a perspective that's a lot more generous and gracious to them. And so the insight was, I learned new information. That person has a big personal issue they're struggling with. Number two, the perspective is, I need to treat them with more grace. I need to treat them more patiently, be more generous to them. And so wisdom begins with knowledge, but it always moves to perspective. Perspective is all about how you view your life, how you view the world around you, the lens that you're looking at everything through. So it begins with knowledge, perspective, but then it goes to transformation. And transformation is all about the actual decisions you make. It's all about the actual decisions you make on a daily basis. Verse 3 says this, to receive instruction in wise dealing. In wise dealing. So what Solomon is saying in the very beginning is that wisdom ultimately is not about knowledge in and of itself. It's about the life it leads you to live. It's about the dealing. It's about how you relate to one another. It's about how you treat people. It's about how you operate with integrity. It's about the way you live your life. Okay, wisdom is not just about gaining information. It's about the truth you live out in your life. If your life is not living out truth, if you are not living out the knowledge you have gained, you are not walking in wisdom. It's not true wisdom. You may appear very wise. You may appear very smart. But if it is not transforming the way you live your life, it is not wisdom. And so we see three things. We see knowledge, new insight, new discoveries, things I've learned that I've never known before, which leads me to view my world and my life differently, which then leads me to actually make a difference in my world, in my life, to live differently. Let me illustrate this for you, okay? With the biblical passage, Psalms 90:12 says this. So teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. So how does wisdom operate in this passage? Let's think about this for a moment, okay? What's the first part of wisdom? It's knowledge. He's saying, teach us to number our days. And so when you number your days, you get a new insight. You gain information. You're saying, I'm 26 years old. That means I've lived this many days, this many years, weeks, months, so on and so forth. And that means if I live to be average age, which is 76, 77 years old for a male, maybe one of you med students can correct me or nurses. But if I live to the average age, that means I've got roughly 52 years left. So 52, that's the new information I gained. When I take the time to number my days, the insight I receive is that light bulb moment. I've only got like 52 years left. That means I've lived a third of my life already. Now, do you see what's happening? The insight of I've got 52 years left then leads to a new perspective, which is this. My life is always getting shorter, right? Like my life is not getting longer. My life is getting shorter and a lot quicker than I like to imagine, seeing that I've already lived a third of it, if I'm lucky. And so the new insight, the number of days I have and I'm going to have, leads to a new perspective that my life is getting shorter, which leads to a transformed life, which is this. Every morning I wake up and I live with purpose. I live intentionally. I don't waste any day or any time. I'm always looking for things that I can make an impact on the kingdom for, because I recognize I've got this many years left. Life is getting shorter, and that's going to force me. It's going to transform the way I live my life. And I'm going to live with purpose and intentionality, and I'm not going to waste any more time. And that's what it means to be wise. Just like that illustration we said earlier, you've got a coworker that you're not getting along with. You have that light bulb moment. Man, they're struggling in their life. And so it changes your perspective. The knowledge changes your perspective, and you say, okay, I need to be more gracious, more generous, more patient with that person. And then it should lead to a transformed life, which means, you know what? I'll pick up your extra work. You go home an hour early. I know you've had a long day. You see what I'm saying here? Now, here's the problem. Let me bring this home for you. There's a lot of really smart people who are totally unwise. There's a lot of people who think they've got wisdom together. They think they've got their act together. They think they're okay. They think they're smart. They think that them and Jesus are on good terms. But because it stops at the knowledge, it never goes on to transformation. They're acting like fools. You know where the fool's market is? It's on Facebook. How many of you have ever been on Facebook and you've just scratched your head like, really? Really? Did you just say that? You know what the best time to do that is? Around the political season. Okay, that's a freebie right there. But man, midterms election in 2014, I screenshot all of mine so I can go back and look at them later because they're hilarious. But anyways, who's keeping tabs? All right, this guy and the NSA. Anyways, some of y'all got that. Some of you, it's okay. I can't tell you how many college students and how many people I see on Facebook who are just ranting and raving about all this knowledge they have, and this is terrible and that's wrong and how could you ever support this, and this is, and they're just a bunch of fools, because it's knowledge just for the sake of knowledge, right? If it ends with only knowledge, if your goal is only to get smarter, only to get more information and never have a new perspective and a transformed life, you are a part of the fool's parade. It's wisdom and knowledge and life-shaping perspective always has to be about the end goal, which is a transformed life to the worship of Jesus and the glory of God. That's the end. That's the goal. Wisdom is always about the end, which is the transformed life. So let me ask you a couple questions tonight, okay? When you study whatever subject it is, whether it be calculus or economics or history or whatever it may be, are you studying in such a way that your hope is that it leads to a new perspective, which then leads to a transformed life? Because if you're not doing those crucial last two steps, you're not seeking wisdom. You're just seeking knowledge for knowledge's sake, and that will lead you to make more foolish decisions. And number two, let me ask you this. Where are your sources for knowledge in this world? All right, I said you're going to face situations that are very gray. You're going to come across things that you don't know the right answer. It's not black and white, and you need knowledge. You need insight to seek out what a wise decision would be. And my question is, where do you go in that moment? What do you base your knowledge, your insight, your wisdom on? Is it through God's word and God's people and good preaching? Or is it through that friend who has gone through just about as much as you have and has just as limited perspective as you? I want you to evaluate in your life and in your heart, where am I basing my info on? Where am I going to help me guide this through life? Because if the source here is limited, then the wisdom here will be limited too. So we see, first of all, what is wisdom? Wisdom is knowledge, perspective, and transformation. But now that we've established that, we've got to ask ourselves the question, just like we started a moment ago, where do we find wisdom? It's good to know what it is, but where do we go looking for it? And the next thing we're going to talk about is where we find that. So if you look at verse 7, Proverbs 1:7, it says this. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. What that verse is saying is the very first step to knowledge, which is the very first step to wisdom, is to have a relationship with God based on fear. Again, we established earlier, do not get mixed up here, that it's not this fear that is destructive in your life, but it's a fear that's healthy in your life, because when you submit yourself to that God who you rightfully should be afraid of, you find nothing but love, joy, and friendship, and commitment to your good. And so the beginning of knowledge, which is the beginning of wisdom, the very first step is to place yourself, submit yourself to the authority of God in your life. Let me illustrate it for you this way. Imagine that wisdom is this city. I don't know if you've ever heard of the book called Pilgrim's Progress, but John Bunyan does this all the time in his book. He personifies people and places and things as wisdom or grace or love. And so I want you to imagine a big city with high walls all the way around it. And this city is wisdom. And when you enter into this city, you become a wise person. Now, in this city, there is only one way in. There is one gate, and the rest of it is completely walled off, impossible to get into. And that gate is called the fear of God. The only way for you to enter into that city is to walk through that gate. And by walking through that gate, it changes your identity. It changes your relationship to the builder of the city. And you submit yourself to him to live under his rules, under his authority. But when you do that and you enter into that gate, you find greater joy and peace and wisdom than you ever could have imagined. In fact, true wisdom is found in that city. Everything else, though it may appear wise, is not wise because it's not found in that city. That's what this passage is saying, is that the only way for you to gain true, authentic wisdom in your life is to do it through the fear of God. He is the gate that you have to walk through to enter into that city called wisdom. But thankfully, the Bible says it even clearer somewhere else. Job 28:28 says this, "And he said to man, 'Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom.'" So he goes beyond. He doesn't say it's the beginning of wisdom. He says to fear God is to be wise, and to be wise is to fear God. He says these two things are so tied together, you cannot separate them. The implication is this, is that outside of the fear of God, there is no true wisdom. There is no authentic wisdom. So how does this work? Because again, if you're like me, I ask the question how a lot and why a lot. It's not just good that I know something's true. I want to know how and why it works the way it works. So let's think about this for a moment, okay? We said earlier that wisdom is all about knowledge that leads to perspective. So for us to be wise, we need to have a greater and bigger perspective of the world around us. And so the wisdom begins with the fear of God because God alone is the only one who has an unlimited perspective in life. Think about this. Think about the most wise person you know right now. Maybe your father, your mom, your grandfather. Oh, let's make it even bigger. Think about the wisest person in the last 100 years or 200 years. Think about Plato, Aristotle. We think about Einstein or even a man like Richard Dawkins. Just genius beyond genius. All of these men, though they appeared to be incredibly wise, all had a very limited perspective because they all died. And at some level, they didn't know what was going on halfway across the world at that time. They didn't know all there was to know about every culture, every people group, every ideology, every thought, every philosophy, worldview, religion. The greatest and wisest men we know, if we're really honest, we have to admit, they have a very limited perspective. And God alone has a perspective that is infinite and unlimited. Why is that true? Because what the Bible says is that God is both separate from the creation, both separate from the universe. He rules over it. He is sovereign over it. And so because he is separate from it, he can see all that takes place within it. But God is also intimate within creation. Because when Jesus Christ, as God, came into this world, he lived the life that you and I lived. He came to know the pain that we know. He lived that daily life for 33 years until he died and rose again. And so God is both outside of creation and he is inside of creation. Let me illustrate it for you another way. Have you ever had a moment where you just got so confused that you're like, I have to take a step back and see the big picture here? Maybe that's just me, but every once in a while I get so confused and life can get so complicated. I'm like, all right, I just need to take 5 minutes, go for a walk, clear my head, and take a few steps back and try to look at the big picture again. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get outside of the situation so I can have a clear perspective of what's taking place. God has both the outside perspective and the inside perspective. In love, Jesus came and he suffered the way you and I suffer. And he dealt with the pain that you and I have dealt with. And he's experienced the joy that we've experienced. But he's also the creator of all of it. And so when you fear God, don't miss this. When you fear God and you submit yourself to his authority, you lay your life down to his power and his authority, and you find that he is committed to you, the infinite depth of all of God's wisdom is at your disposal. What an incredible thought. What a life-changing, game-changing thought. that if I lay my life down before the creator of all that there is, who is both outside and inside, I am now connected to, I now have access to the infinite depths of God's wisdom. What situation could I ever face that is too daunting for that? What circumstances, what gray area in life could I ever face that God's wisdom and grace is not sufficient for? And the answer is none. The answer is you can't go to the end of his wisdom. You can't go to the end of his grace because there is no end. It goes on and on and on and on. And so the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, because only when you are connected to the creator of God, who's both out and in, can you then gain his perspective and then have a transformed life because of it. Now, maybe tonight you're sitting here and you're thinking, Brian, that seems to be a very narrow thought. Okay, I understand what you're saying, but what you're saying, Brian, is outside of Christianity, outside of the Bible, there is no true wisdom. What right do you have to say that one religion has exclusive access to true wisdom? Who are you to say that the way I live my life, the wisdom I choose to define, is not good enough? Well, I want you to consider this for a moment. If you've thought this, or maybe you're thinking it now, I want you to consider for a moment that in our society, the highest value we place is on the individual sovereignty of a person. I am who I am, and you have no right to tell me what to do, how to live, what to think, what to say, how to dress, or anything in my life. I have rights, privileges that are impossible to infringe upon. Those are my rights, my privileges. In our Western culture, the individual takes supreme over the community. That is what we value above all things. And what that leads us to think is that I, Brian Franco, as a person, I have all of the resources, all of the knowledge, all of the wisdom that I need to define truth, meaning, hope, ambition, purpose, and joy in my life. I have complete access, complete ability, the full potential, all the resources I need to create truth in my life, to define what it means to have purpose, and to define what wisdom looks like in my life. Don't tell me what to do. And when you say that God has that wisdom that I need and I don't, that is very narrow, and that is very bigoted, and that is very critical and narrow-minded of you. Okay, let's just think about this for a moment, okay? Two options. Option one, option two. Option one says this. There is a creator. He lives both outside and inside of creation. And in love, he gave us his word to guide us and lead us to lives that were healthy and flourishing and filled with joy. And he has the wisdom that we need to go through that, because he made everything, because he knows everything. Option two says this. I, who cannot keep my own heart beating, who can't even control whether or not I'm breathing at all times, who will die one day, if I'm lucky at 75 or 76, who has access to more information than any human's ever had access to, but in a very real sense is very limited to the things that I can learn and grow in, I have everything I need to define meaning in my own life. Which is the more arrogant proposition? That there is a creator who loves you so much that he suffered in your existence with you and for you, even unto death, who then gives you guides and rules to help you flourish in life, not to oppress you and to enslave you, but to help you live to the fullest, to give you wisdom and how to face all the difficulties of living in a broken world? Or what makes more sense to say, in my limited perspective, I want what I want, and I know how to make that happen. When I think of it, it almost makes sense to me like this. You know, last week I used this illustration of the fear of God in driving and seeing a police officer and being pulled over by him. Let's continue that for a moment. These two options, it's kind of like a person who's on a road trip, and as they're driving down the highway, they see a speed limit sign that says 70 miles an hour is a speed limit. And what they realize is the person who created the highway, who built the highway, said, for you to travel safely and happily on this highway, you need not to go over 70 miles per hour. But that person driving on their road trip says, you know, I recognize your authority to put that sign there, but I'm not satisfied driving 70. I want to go 85. And so then they look at their GPS and think, okay, my GPS will tell me what the speed limit is too. Let's see what it says. But the problem is this GPS is old. It's like 4 or 5 years old, and it hasn't been updated in like 3 or 4 years. And so the information it have is faulty because it's based on information from a long time ago. And so they look at the GPS, and it says, aha, the speed limit's actually 75. Well, I choose to believe what my GPS says and not what the creator of the highway says. And I'm going to go 85 because 10 over 75 is not too bad. Do you think when that person gets pulled over, and eventually they will get pulled over, it's just a matter of time. Do you think when that person gets pulled over, the cop's going to excuse their speeding because they chose their GPS over what the builder of the highway said? No. The cop's going to say, you saw the authority. You recognized the rules that were in place for your good, for your safety, and for your well-being. And you chose to reject them. Therefore, here is your ticket. Go to court and pay the fine. You and I have to ask ourselves this question, where are we getting our information for life? What are we basing our decisions on? What is influencing our perspective? Where are we going to gain knowledge of how to live and view our life and then the actions that they will produce? Is it on the guides that the ruler and creator of all that there is has given to us in his world and in creation? Or is it through what we want to define as real and true and good and wise in our own lives? Because I promise you, if you're doing it your own way, eventually life will show you that you're wrong. I'm not even talking about a future judgment. I'm saying one time, sooner or later, life is going to prove to you that the reality you've tried to create for yourself is not working and is not good. And some of you are feeling the pain and tension of that right now. In fact, don't we all do that? Aren't we all that person who is sitting in the front seat driving and says, I see that it says 70, but I really want to do this, and I'm going to justify my action in this way. I don't know about you, but that's me. The story of my life can be written out in series of failures and times that I've said, I know what God called me to do, but I chose not to. I chose my own way. And then reality set in, and I realized how foolish the decisions were I made, and I realized that I needed to fear God, because in God I have true wisdom and love and grace and power to overcome all this stuff. You know, the crazy thing is God knows that's true too. It's not like you and I are fooling him. He knows that we rebel, that we fail, that we fall short all the time. And he knows it so much, and he loves us so much, that like I said earlier, he sent his son Jesus as God himself to come into this world and to live the perfect life that you and I never could have lived and never did live, and then to suffer the consequences of the sinful life that you and I have lived. Think about this for a second. When Jesus walked the face of this earth almost 2,000 years ago, he lived a perfectly wise life. He never sank into foolishness. He always feared his Father. He always leaned in on his Father. He lived a perfectly wise life. And he had every right to inherit the blessings of a wise life, because what we see in the Bible is that over and over again, when a person makes wise decisions, God honors those decisions, and their life is improved. It is bettered. And Jesus had every right to take the inheritance and the privilege and the blessing of living a perfectly wise life. But you know what he said? He said, God, because I love them, I am going to take the foolish life that they lived and suffer the consequences thereof. All of the pain that came from their foolish decisions, all of the suffering that they deserve for the foolish decisions they've made, I'm going to take that onto myself. And if they can see that I have received that from them, and they can trust that their foolishness, their sin was placed on me, I will then give them my wisdom. I will then give them the blessings of the wise life that I have lived. And there is this incredible exchange where we take the glory and honor and blessing that Jesus deserved for the wisdom he lived out, and he takes our shame and failure and suffering for the foolishness that you and I have lived with and done. And so when we look to the cross, we see that God cared so much about how you and I drive the car that he came into this world and died in our place to do something about it. So where are you at tonight? Has a season of foolish decisions caught up with you, and you're starting to feel the heat and pressure and pain of suffering, the consequences of that season? You know, God offers a better way, not an arrogant, enslaving, powerful way, but he says, I created you, I love you, and I have this wisdom at your disposal that if you just lay your life down for me, if you look to the cross and submit yourself and believe that what Jesus did was for you and trust me with everything, if you lay yourself down, I will be committed to you. I will lay everything out for you, and you have full access to all the wisdom you will ever need. And I will walk with you through the rest of your life. Not just strengthen you, I myself will walk with you. That's what he offers tonight. So where are you looking for wisdom? What are the sources you're going to? What are the wells you're diving into to find out the information I need? What's the perspective that you have on the life you live? And is it actually doing your life any good? Is your life being transformed for your good, for your blessing, and for God's glory? Because if it's not, something is wrong. The fear of God gives us the perspective we need to walk in wisdom.
Thanks for listening to the Vertical Access Podcast. If you'd like to know more about VA, check out highstreet.org.